I bet everybody remembers where they were on 9/11. The 20th commemoration, the 20th observation of that event is just over 6 weeks away. And Afterburner Al and Weasel were in the air carrying passengers that
Sounds
very
legit.
Day. Well, so the story we were telling, the story you were telling, the this point is that you are, at this point in the process, you're on the ground with your passengers. You're at the destination airport that you intended to get to, right?
Yep. Yeah, and he had read the statement as you know, in the traffic pattern. We came in and landed. And to kind of give you, those of you that were watching it, you know, on TV, as we deplaned the airplane, we walked into to the FBO, and we walked in, and the first thing I saw was the TV was on, and all of a sudden, as we were watching, the first tower collapsed. So that was kind of the timeline where we were at, and shortly after that, it was like the only funny thing that happened that day was there was a young girl that was working. She was one of the fuelers at the airport, and she was doing her private pilot check ride that day, and she had been in the oral exam, you know, for this whole thing. So she and the examiner had no clue that anything was going on, and so she came out and told one of her coworkers, "I need you to pull such and such tail number out." Because
oral was done,
oral's
time
done,
to do the practical.
Going to do the practical. And they're like, no, you don't understand. You're not going to fly. And she's like, no, I passed the oral. I'm done. I'm going to fly.
Well.
And they're like, no, you can't fly. And it was the examiner was like, you know, they thought that they were just coworkers giving each other a hard time. And they're like, no, look at that. And they're like, well, it's a building on fire in New York. And they're like, no. Like, and all of a sudden, they're looking at the ramp, and there's all these airplanes that were there. And they're like, what's going on? And so they were like coming out of their bunker from doing their oral. So
I think you told me a little bit of this because we're just all in a blur. But when we got out, you know, some people came pouring out of the FBO and they're like, "Are you supposed to be here?" You know, because not because they were distrustful of us, just because it was raining on airplanes. Everybody was told to land. So, you know, trying to figure out, you know, we're one of the rare people that actually were intending to go to York.
Well, and it was a busy airport because there's a really good airport restaurant there. I don't know if it's still open, but 20 years ago, they had a fantastic airport. So they have a lot of traffic that would come in for that. And it's a relatively small airport. So, you know, having the King Air landing there was sort of like the 747 coming in here. I mean, it was people were like, "Where'd you guys come from?"
So you read your statement to the passengers, but you were on the ground at that point.
No, we read that statement to the...
In the pattern.
In the pattern on common traffic advisory frequency, because it was air traffic control's instructions to tell everybody to get on the ground. So we relayed the message through common traffic advisory frequency to anybody that if they had questions, call the nearest air traffic facility, but you have to land now.
I see. Okay. And so you're on the ground. Your passengers, do they, in the FBO, do they get a sense of what's going on? Do they continue with their mission, which was to join up with the other employees?
Yeah, there was some, as I remember, there was someone there to pick them up, and they went off to do their thing. And we called back to our dispatcher and told them, you know, where we were, and they were concerned, and lots of friends and family were concerned, because about the time we landed there was the news flash on the bottom of the screen that said there was an unidentified twin-engine airplane that had crashed somewhere in Pennsylvania, and we were flying a twin-engine airplane in Pennsylvania, and the news did, you know, there was no information, and so and this was like before, you know, we had, you know,
a lot of the flight tracking was
flight
still
tracking
in the infancy,
So we called and told them we were on the ground, we were safe, and I said, oh, by the way, and get us hotel rooms and rental car, you know, get us everything, because, and they're like, you guys don't, I'm like, no, we are not getting out of here today. This is like, they've gone to the nuclear option of shutting the airspace down, and it's going to be a few days, so get us hotel rooms and get us a car, and so we did that, thankfully, because by 5 o'clock that night, I mean, there were people, like, they were sleeping in churches and the YMCA
they're
and all over the place.
They're looking at trains and buses to get around, you know. We've been around the Northeast a bunch, but you know, we're slowly appreciating how congested the Northeast is with all the people who live there and all the transportation options. And then when you have all these people displaced or want to get out of there, suddenly the options go to zero. All the rental cars are eaten up, and all the, you know, all the train tickets have been bought, and all the bus tickets have been purchased. I didn't necessarily believe. It's like, oh, there's no way they shut down the airspace for more than a couple hours. But he was on it, so he made the right decision of requesting a lodging and transportation.
So you're in a hotel for a couple days.
Yeah, we left on Thursday the 13th, and we kept calling flight service. You know, back in the old days when you could call flight service, and we kept calling to get an update, and they said, well, we haven't heard anything yet, and finally they called and said, okay, they're going to open it up. And they made this, and I thought it was the silliest decision of 9/11. They said, we're going to open it up to the air carriers first. I'm like, isn't that who had the problem with security?
So they said,
oh, you know, if you're 135 or 121, you're going to be able to go at like noon, and it was like 11 o'clock. So we quick filed and on Thursday. And so that was when we were able to get home. And that was one of the neatest things was we were one of the very first airplanes in the air just by dumb luck, because I happened to call flight service when they got word that we were able to go. And so there was a procedure for filing Tango November.
We
went through that. And I remember we took off and we immediately contacted Harrisburg Approach, and we got on, and the controller was like, "Oh, are we back in business?" And I said, "Yep." They just said we could leave at noon, and he said, and they had gotten okay, great. And there was a camaraderie with all the controllers because they were still on duty because they had you know air cover, you know, military airplanes, but they were bored, and so there was a kind of this feeling that things are going to be okay, things are going to get back to normal. It's going to, you know, but we were flying again. And we did not hear another airplane from York, Pennsylvania, all the way back to Milwaukee until we got on with the tower at Milwaukee, and then there was an airplane that was coming out. But there was a kind of a little bit of a, you know, backslapping kind of, you know, hey, great to see you guys again. You know, everybody be safe. And that was kind of a, to me, kind of a really cool memory of that week.
One of the things that the only thing I remembered to do when we first got on the ground and after we got everything settled, I called back to my campus radio station, KVSC in Minnesota, and offered an interview, some exclusive content for them for their noon show. That was the one thing I contributed to all this quick thinking.
Did living through 9/11 in the way that you did it, did that change your relationship with your career or with the industry that you've been a part of for so long?
Most definitely. I mean, they call us kind of the lost generation because, like, we were flying King Airs and I had an interview scheduled with Northwest for later in that month, and I lost 15 years out of that career. I just got hired at an airline a year ago, but it derailed everybody's plans, and there was thousands of pilots lost their jobs, got furloughed. He and I have been fortunate that we've been able to find a chair when the music stops, doing a huge number of things in our career. But yeah, that definitely, we were in our 20s at the time, and that was it was a similar situation to COVID. So like last year when COVID happened and everybody was losing their mind, like, oh, we're going to get furloughed. And I was just like, oh, I got this T-shirt already. We're going to just everybody hang on. We're going to be fine. It's going to, you know, everyone's going to panic for 6 months, a year, whatever. And then we're going to be back. And, you know, you look at the convention, man, this place is going full speed ahead. All the airlines are, everybody's hiring, and the pilot shortage is sort of back. So, it affected it and in good ways and bad ways both, because I didn't end up, you know, on the fast track to the major airline thing. I did a whole bunch of different stuff that you know, certainly our old co-host on the radio show, Swede, he used to say, anytime something happened that was sort of, you know, traumatic or whatever, he'd be like, it builds character. And one day something had gone on, and I said, it builds character. And he looked over at me and he goes, Weasel, how much more character do you think we need?
One of the things I get asked a lot when I tell that story is the first thing they ask, because of my heritage, I'm half Lebanese, half German, and obviously I have an Arabic name, and the first thing they ask, or one of the things that they ask is...
Afterburner's his Arabic?
Yes. So I've just pulled the curtain down, but it's the...
I think it's the Al part.
Yes. They ask me, it says, so have you been discriminated against? Have you had problems? And to tell you the truth, at least my immediate pilots at the first company, they were kind of protective, and it was good. I didn't necessarily get hassled, but I think somebody made an offhand comment, and one of the captains, I think it was Dave, the old guy.
Oh, Two Pots,
old Two Pots. Yeah, he got a little hotter in the collar. I need two pots of coffee. You tell us, because as an FO, you make the coffee. So, but first time I really got overtly hassled was when my cousin and I tried to drive over the border into Canada from Sault Ste. Marie just for dinner, because we had a cabin up there, and we got hassled because we had a rental car. That's another whole segment, a story for another time. But
I thought you were going to talk about Karen's ramp check. Yes. We had our POI at the time, was she was a riot, and she's since passed away, but we had, there, someone had a, there was a, a it was Newsweek or Time or something like that had this picture of a little kid, and we photoshopped his face on this kid, and it was the written. It was our Fareed Zakaria, who's a I think he's a CNN personality now, but he's very famous. And anyway, so
we put
it was hanging up in the pilot's planning room, and she came in and she was clamping down on everybody for whatever was the
because she's overseeing the certificates and the operations
and she came in there and he and I walked in and she was yelling at somebody and she said and this and she points to that and she's like what is that all about maybe you guys spent more time blah, blah, blah. And she points at me and goes and you are supposed to be his friend and she turned and stormed out of the room and we doubled over laughing. It was kind of fun. So
and I had put myself on the radar. A year before that I had gotten hired there, and I had locked horns with her for about a couple weeks because at our local airport, I was organizing a pumpkin drop. And somehow the FAA got wind of that, and I spent a lot of uncomfortable phone calls with her. And I had never met her, and then she sees my name on a list of new hires. So
yes, the great vegetable ordnance drop.
Oh, goodness. I want to thank you guys both for telling your stories and for inviting me to help you kind of lay all that out. It's been a privilege.
Thank you so much for asking us about it. It's one of those things where, we told around a campfire, and it's bits and pieces. And
hopefully they recorded it, so when we do this interview again for the 40th anniversary, we can compare to see how our memories are doing.
Are falling apart. We're going to go to, in just a few seconds, we're going to go to Theater in the Woods. But just remember, if you love this, tomorrow we'll be, Weasel and I will be on for another edition of Traffic Jam. And of course, on Sunday, we'll be grading takeoffs, as we mentioned. And of course, more EAA Radio tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. You're listening to EAA Radio.